Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome into Under the Hoodies. I'm your host, Mike Pizeski, joined as always by Bill Kegel. Bill, we're going to get right into it. We've got a lot of NFL Combine talk to get to. We're going to talk about Johnny Manziel, Ron Jaworski thing, that he doesn't see him as a high pick, and to talk about Wichita State being overrated, in my opinion anyway. But first, let's talk about this this cleanse that I'm on. You think it sounds awful, but I think you should try it.
How do you feel currently?
I don't have a lot of energy. I can't eat a whole lot of carbs.
So I don't see it being a good thing. Like, what are you doing to combat the lack of carbs in your life?
Eating a lot of protein, my friend. Eating a lot of protein.
All right. It just sounds awful. It sounds horrible.
I will tell you that the first six days, I lost like 6 pounds. I'm on a nice little pound a day kick right now.
Okay, well, if it's working for you, then you know what? I'm not gonna sit on my high horse, weighing horse down, judging.
Who are you to judge you and your glass of wine and your iPad?
Yeah, yes, exactly. Well, it's good wine.
We're painting a very feminine picture of you for the listeners. The first week we had
well,
the Mean Girls reference.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up.
And now you're drinking a fine Chardonnay.
No, it's white Zinfandel.
White? That doesn't help your cause at all.
Ah, my love of wine doesn't make me not an amateur somm.
This is Under the Hoodies. He's Bill Kegel. I'm Mike Pizeski, talking about wine, herbal cleanses, and everything else that does not matter.
Exactly. You're on a diet of a waste model right now.
I'm going to look like Moby by the time this is over, I think.
You know what? I never thought of that. You two looking alike, but that makes a lot of sense.
I got a few pounds on him, though, I think. So
a little bit.
But speaking
make
of guys.
Make some music and do some yoga, and you'll be all right.
That I think I could do. But speaking of guys who don't look like Moby, Jadeveon Clowney, Johnny Manziel, probably the two hot names at the NFL Combine right now. And listen, I'm going to throw the question right at you. We've talked at length about it on this show. I mean, listen, if I'm the Houston Texans, I'm Bill O'Brien. I'm not touching Johnny Manziel. I'm not even touching a quarterback. I'm taking Jadeveon Clowney. He's the most athletic, ferocious athlete in the draft. You bookend him with J.J. Watt for years to come. I don't see why you wouldn't. I try to convince that, unless you agree.
I agree. I don't see why they would take a quarterback. I mean, we discussed this. Matt Schaub is not a bad quarterback. He's had moments in the NFL. And a couple of years ago, when T.J. Yates was quarterback for him, everybody was screaming. Only if they had Matt Schaub. And, you know, no one was screaming that. Everyone sort of forgot what Matt Schaub is capable of, his ceiling, what he can get to. Clearly, all of Houston has forgotten that because they booed the guy. They I don't know if they vandalized his house, but they definitely heckled
they showed
him
up
while he was at his home. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think Houston, I don't know if they're just desperate for a winner or what, but they really, really should keep him. Bill O'Brien might be able to help his career kind of kickstart it a little bit. And why not have two dominant edge rushers like that?
Why not? And if Brian Cushing could ever stay healthy, you're pretty much set there at the linebacking position. You shore up the secondary. I don't understand. You run the ball. You have Arian Foster. If he can stay healthy, there's a lot of questions. Don't get me wrong, but if you can stay healthy, run the ball. Ask Matt Schaub to protect it and don't put him in spots unless you absolutely have to where he needs to go out and win you a game. You can protect the ball, play good defense. That division is winnable. I don't think Indy is invincible by any stretch. Tennessee is certainly not in the upper echelon of teams. I say you draft Clowney, address perhaps your quarterback needs later, and then just see what you have. That team can win now. A lot of people picked them to win the Super Bowl last year, Bill.
Yeah, they did, and, I mean, they started out 2-0, they started out hot, and they, you know, they finally got a receiver. I'm just going to say something about Andre Johnson. Who's the best receiver he's had? I outlined outside of him before this season.
Jacoby Jones?
That's really,
I don't know.
Jacoby Jones might be it. Kevin Walter maybe. But they finally got the guy. They finally got the guy to pair with him, and now people are spreading rumors about the guy retiring. DeAndre Hopkins is a stud. He's going to be a stud, and that is a good pair of receivers for Schaub to throw to and get used to. Like you said, if they can just keep Foster healthy, they have a decent offensive line. I mean, they'll be fine. Like especially with Clowney, and I as a Giants fan, it sort of reminds me of Strahan and Tuck, but on steroids. Strahan, Tuck, and OC, but on steroids. Like those ends and just a havoc they created. And then obviously Pierre Paul is the and let me know what you think about this. Pierre Paul is the comp that Clowney is getting right now. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I usually hear a lot of people compare him to Lawrence Taylor. You know what I mean? All those guys. I think Pierre Paul is more ferocious. I think he's, I don't know if he's fast. He just seems quicker to me. Just watching on film and just watching games, he just seems quicker. He seems stronger. Obviously he didn't have the best year last year. Nicked up. I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. I think they're foolish if they don't take him. You just go back to what the Giants have done. They won two Super Bowls because of a defensive line. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's a clip of Brady saying like it's like throwing through a forest.
Answer that. Who do you double? You can't double Watt. You can't double Clowney. What do you do?
I don't know. It just, I mean, you and I can sit here. We're not getting paid a ton of money like those, like the decision makers for the Houston Texans. But if I was, my pick would be Clowney. That's all I can say.
I didn't mean to interrupt your Brady portrait painting analogy. Sorry.
Oh, no. There's a picture, or there's a clip of Brady during Super Bowl 46, and he says, and I'll paraphrase because he cursed. He says it's like throwing through a forest against that line, and that's what it is. And can you imagine if the Texans just have those edge rushers, they, like I said, they're going to cause havoc for Andrew Luck for years. And why take a quarterback first? There's no Andrew Luck in this draft. There's Blake Bortles and Johnny Manziel. Like they're not. Those guys aren't going to set the NFL on fire, honestly.
Well, Johnny. Roger Worski of ESPN seems to think that Johnny Manziel is a third-round talent at best. I mean, clearly he's not going to fall all the way to the third round. He's going to go in the top 10. His accuracy isn't there, his arm strength isn't there, his mechanics, his footwork, anything. There's nothing there, except he was the most electrifying player on the college circuit for 2 years. That's what he has going for him, and that's it.
I heard an interesting stat. I heard an interesting stat. According to the guy training Johnny Manziel, he led the NCAA in accuracy from the pocket. Do you think that's because he was such a threat to run that a lot of teams were backing off, playing zone, maybe having a defender as a spy and him sort of manipulating them? Or how do you explain that?
There's definitely a lot of passing lanes when you're playing against Texas A&M. They spread the field 4 or 5 wide every time. The design of that offense is to get clear passing lanes, is to get one-on-one matchups in the secondary. And when you're throwing to Mike Evans, it's really not that hard to be inaccurate, is it?
No, the guy's 6'6".
Yeah, 6'6", 250, whatever the hell he is, and he runs a 4.4. So, I don't know. That is an interesting stat, I will be honest with you. I don't know how well that translates, though. I mean, there's being accurate at the college game, there's system quarterbacks, there's all that stuff, but when you talk about making progressions at the next level, reading defense, everything's pre-snap now. Everything. You see Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck even, he kind of evolved into that role this year. Everything's pre-snap. I don't know if Johnny Manziel or any of these guys is capable of it, and the one guy that nobody's talking about is Teddy Bridgewater, and he was the surefire number one pick coming into last season. He's kind of fallen back a bit, to where he may fall, you know, third, fourth, fifth to maybe Minnesota, to Cleveland, something like that. In my opinion, he might be the best quarterback of the bunch that should go number one, but I don't think he is.
Right. Well, I want to get back to Manziel real quick because I just thought of something. Now, I'm going to read you some stats from a player's college, his senior year at University of Missouri, and you're going to figure out who this guy is pretty quick. 4,300 yards, 72.9% completion percentage, 39 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, and only took 14 sacks. Can you tell me who that is?
Was you talking this year?
No. I'm talking from a couple years ago. Okay. He's a little bigger than Johnny Manziel on the weight side, but as far as height goes, he's a good comp.
You're talking Chase Daley, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. Yeah, and what's he doing in the NFL? They're 72% college, like almost 73. One more completed pass, and I think he's a 73% completion percentage. So if that tells you anything about the stat that I just gave you, I think you hit the nose right on the head. He's kind of a college system quarterback.
But at the same time, he's not, because he can improvise with the best of them. I mean, we saw the plays against Duke where he's literally running around like his helmet's on fire, and then he just throws the ball up. You can't do that in the NFL. You can't. I don't care how bad the defenses are. The Indianapolis Colts have a terrible defense. You still can't do that against them. All right? You just can't.
No, Robert Mathis would catch him. Yeah, Robert Mathis is faster than Johnny Manziel.
And bury him in the dirt. And that's just the way it is in the NFL, and I just don't know how well that translates. Listen, he's got a couple months to prove everybody wrong. He's got plenty of time to work with coaches to say the right things, to do the right things, and to figure out how to throw the ball in the pocket, because we've seen quarterbacks, they're not able to survive. Running quarterbacks don't survive. They don't. Michael Vick doesn't survive. Colin Kaepernick kind of had to evolve into a passing quarterback. Robert Griffin III had a terrible year this year. It's the NFL. You got to pass the ball. You can't run it if you're a quarterback. That's the bottom line.
I agree. So, what were you going to say about Teddy Bridgewater before you got cut you off?
Well, I was going to bring the show back here, listening to Under the Hoodies. He's Bill Kegel. I'm Mike Pizeski. And what I was saying about Teddy Bridgewater is that, you know, he was, like I said, he's a clear-cut number one pick coming into last season. Didn't have a great year. The loss kind of hurt them. They didn't get to play in a BCS game. But still, he had a fantastic year. Didn't play the greatest competition, and I guess you could say the same for him. He's a little bigger, arm strength a little better. Doesn't quite have the improvisation skills that Johnny Manziel has. But I think he's a smarter guy. He's certainly not going to make any dumb decisions. You know what I mean? He's not going to go boozing the night before the game. And I'm not – you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just – I don't know. If I'm taking a quarterback, my money's on Teddy Bridgewater.
But there's a lot of people super high on Blake Bortles. What do you think about Bortles? I like him just for being – you know, he's a large man. The high interception low interception total, mid 20 to 30 touchdowns. I mean, he's got the arm strength. He can move for a big guy, which is impressive. But I don't know. People aren't exactly, praising him as the next Peyton Manning. What do you think?
He's got the NFL body, that's for sure. There's no debating that. But I don't. It's one of those things that you just don't know. You don't know because he played. He played in the same conference as Teddy Bridgewater did. And,
yeah,
they got to the BCS game. He put up good numbers. But what does it mean? In reality, we have no idea until he gets to the NFL, until somebody analyzes all of his film, sits down with him, interviews him. You're going to have to take a chance. I mean, there's quarterback-starved teams. There's so many of them, Bill. Houston, Minnesota, Cleveland, Oakland, there's so many that you just have to take one of these guys, I guess. But, I mean,
I don't think so.
Christian Ponder and Jake Locker. We saw what happened there. Ponder, Locker, although Jake Locker was having a pretty good year before he got hurt, but teams reached for them, didn't work out, and now what? Now they're stuck.
I agree. Obviously, the NFL, I mean, it's been said a million times, you need a quarterback to succeed, but I think it comes to coaching in the right system. I think we touched on it with Russell Wilson, our first show, where we said he kind of fell into the right team, the right coach, the right system. And I think you need a coach that'll play. Or another example is Kaepernick with Harbaugh. I mean, do you think he's the same quarterback if he goes to if Dennis Allen gets a hold of him in Oakland? I don't think so. So
no,
I think
he's
that's
definitely there. Well, system is a huge thing. And we can talk to Brian Shipley about that once he joins us here in a few minutes. System is a huge thing where it has to be the right fit. Russell Wilson's in a perfect fit. Colin Kaepernick is in a perfect fit. I don't think anybody would say, even though that they made the playoffs in this first year, that Robert Griffin III was in the ideal situation for him. He's more of a running quarterback. He's more of an out-of-the-pocket type of guy. He struggles to make throws within the pocket. So system is a huge thing. And I'm not entirely sure. Can you tailor an offense toward a quarterback's strength in the NFL?
I think if the quarterback's strength is strong enough, if that makes sense, I think look at Kaepernick. They used to do the read option to open up the run. They kind of had to abandon that. Statistically, because I drafted him one of my first three picks in the fantasy, in our fantasy league, he didn't sort of perform up to expectations. But, I mean, I still think they were the second or third best team in the league going into the playoffs.
No question about that.
I think you can.
I don't know. We're joined now by Brian Shipley, and he's going to give us some insight on the NFL Combine. And Brian, we're talking about college quarterbacks and how they translate to the NFL game. And the question I pose to Bill is, can you tailor an offense in the NFL around a quarterback? Basically, if Houston does take Johnny Manziel number one, do they then have to scheme an entire offense to meet his skills?
Mike and Bill, thank you very much for having me on the show. Before I answer that, I just want to say, you know, the Christians have Easter and Christmas. Jewish people have Hanukkah, and I've just wrapped up the Senior Bowl, the East-West Shrine game, and the Combine. I couldn't feel any better about things. So with that said, I think that, yeah, you can tailor your offense to a quarterback's specific strengths, but I also think that it might not be the most prudent decision because, let's say you draft Johnny Manziel and you tailor it for a scrambling quarterback and your backup is, you know, a classic drop back passer, we'll say, you know, Yates, for instance. I think if, you know, Manziel, who is a huge injury risk with the way he plays, if he goes down and you don't have a guy like Johnny Manziel, now you have to change up your whole offensive system on the fly to suit the backup quarterback, and I just don't know if that's the way you want to do it.
Yeah, I certainly don't think that's the way you want to do it either. And that's an excellent point, actually. Now, we saw Bill O'Brien. He likes to throw the ball. He comes from New England. He had Brady, and then he had Hackenberg at Penn State. Bill, I'm just going to flat out ask you, is Johnny Manziel a guy that can chuck the ball 40 times a game without a consistent running game? Because we've seen Arian Foster get nicked up a couple times last year, sat out most of the year. Can Johnny Manziel succeed if he has to throw the ball 40 times a game?
I don't think so. I don't think he's shown that. I think his real strength is kind of scrambling around and sort of catching the defense off balance and throwing to a very, very tall, athletic receiver. That's all he's shown anyway from what I've watched of him. I mean, he had a great game against a really good defense in Alabama, but he hasn't shown that he can, you know, just sit back and pick teams apart and play from behind with his arm.
What do you think, Shipley?
And you know, Mike, I like the way you worded that question as far as can he throw a ball 40 times and be successful? And I think the answer is an absolute no. You know, I think that if there's one thing I learned from watching Russell Wilson this year is that if you have a strong running game, you have a terrific defense, you have solid special teams, you can get away with a quarterback that all you're asking of them is to not turn the ball over, pick up key third downs, and once or twice a quarter make a terrific play where you go scramble, make a big play down the field, either with your legs or with your arm. And I think if that's what you're asking Johnny Manziel to do, I think you can be successful with him. But I think if you're asking him to be, you know, the guy that's going to be five wide receivers spread out, drop back the pass 45 times, I just don't think he's going to be successful like that. I just don't think that he has the NFL arm strength, pocket awareness, and, you know, the other tangible things that you need in order to be a successful NFL quarterback.
Passing basically, we all agree with Ron Jaworski. He certainly has far more credibility than we do. But so if you're Houston, Brian, and you don't take Johnny Manziel, is the clear-cut choice then Jadeveon Clowney? I don't really think that there's any other decision that they're facing. It's either Manziel or it's Clowney.
I totally agree, Mike. I think that this draft's so deep and there's so many terrific players, but I think what's kind of been overshadowed is, and at least in my opinion, the quarterback class this year is as poor as it was last year. I love Teddy Bridgewater, but, you know, he doesn't really seem to fit Bill O'Brien's system. Doesn't seem like they're really all that into him. So I think if you're not going to take Manziel, I would, in fact, take Jadeveon Clowney just because I feel like if he does flame out due to, you know, whether it's character issues, work ethic issues, whatever, I think that since it's Bill O'Brien's first year on the job, he can afford to swing and miss with a big-time player. Whereas, you know, if it's maybe year three, year four where you're sweating, you know, you have to make sure that you get it right with that number one overall pick. But I think Houston's in a position where they can gamble a little bit. You know, they made a good point on NFL Network the other day that he's going to be in a meeting room with J.J. Watt, who I think we'd agree is the best defensive lineman in the NFL, and he only knows one speed, and that's full speed. So you kind of hope that, you know, almost through osmosis, that rubs off on Jadeveon Clowney, and he, too, you know, shows the same effort every practice, every game, all season long.
Certainly his work ethic has been in question. You are under the hoodies. I'm Mike Pizeski. He's Bill Cagle, joined by Brian Shidley, talking about the NFL Combine right now. And, Bill, I'm going to ask you this question first. Remember a few years back when Atlanta really kind of gave up a lot of picks to move up to get Julio Jones, and I posted on Twitter today that I really think that the Patriots need to kind of do the same thing to go up and get Sammy Watkins, a receiver from Clemson. The window's closing on Tom Brady. He only has two or three probably elite years left. He could probably play forever. He's Tom Brady and do whatever he wants. But do you make that move? That's not really what the Patriots do. But you need a playmaker. All right, you're going to get Gronkowski back next year. Do you go get Sammy Watkins? Do you really give up a few picks and say, you know what, we're going to try to win this right now?
I'm going to say no. I don't think you do that if you're them. They've proven they can be successful without an elite receiver. And the only thing I would say, I'm going to sort of contradict myself a little bit here, but the only thing I would say against that is, are they going to have Gronkowski next year? Because that guy can't say, they say, you know, I remember the same conversation happening this year, or excuse me, last year about this past season, which is they're going to have Gronkowski back. They're going to be fine. I mean, they thought, at this time last year, they thought we are going to have Hernandez and Gronkowski, and this is going to be great. Our offense is going to be fantastic, and, you know, no such luck. So they made it to the AFC Championship again with subpar receiving options. I think that there is value in receiver, you know, towards the bottom of the draft, bottom of the first round, excuse me. I mean, people seem to be in love with Jordan Matthews. We mentioned Mike Adams.
Mike Evans.
I mean, so, yeah, I had Marquise Lee. There's players.
Well, here's my thing, and I'll ask this to you, Brian, is if it's not Sammy, and Bill Belichick has missed on a ton of receivers. No, his history is not great, and really the NFL's history is not great in terms of drafting receivers. But Sammy Watkins seems to me like he's a can't-miss prospect. He's big, physical, fast, can run all the routes, make all the catches. He's clearly the number one receiver in this draft. Why not make a splash and go get him? Or do you sit back and feel comfortable with your scouting and say, all right, we can get another guy at the end of the first round or in the later rounds? To me, if you're trying to win now, you're trying to maximize Tom Brady's last few years, I think this is a move that you certainly have to consider.
I agree, Mike. I personally love the idea. I think that 2 years ago, Tom Brady took a massive pay cut to help out the Patriots as far as cap space in order to go all in during this last final window of opportunity they have to be a perennial Super Bowl contender. And every year, you know, we see Bill Belichick sort of take that conservative approach where he's going to trade back out of the first round, stockpile picks, et cetera, et cetera. And now I think the time is that they have plenty of depth. What they need now is star-caliber players. And I've heard a lot of comparisons for Sammy Watkins. I personally like my comparison the best, and I think that he's a cross between Percy Harvin and Randall Cobb. And then just imagine that guy and those little slant rub routes the Patriots love to run. And now all of a sudden you have Tom Brady throwing a 7-yard pass to a guy that every time he touches the ball is a threat to take it to the end zone. That would give him the most dynamic weapon since Randy Moss in his prime. And I think that Tom Brady would just be tickled pink if they made that decision to go all in, trade up, and get maybe not even the best receiver in the draft, maybe the best talent in the draft other than Jadeveon Clowney.
Well, there's no question he's certainly a talented player. And Bill, could you imagine, instead of, if you're Tom Brady, just you wake up sometime in May and you have Sammy Watkins. So instead of throwing 7-yard crossing routes to Kembrell Tompkins, all of a sudden you're throwing him to Sammy Watkins. And granted, he hasn't played it down in the NFL. I get it. But what he's shown at Clemson and on the collegiate level, getting better every single year, that certainly has to – if I'm Tom Brady, I'm not demanding that they go draft Sammy Watkins or Mike Evans or anybody else for that matter. I'm saying get me help. Like Brian said, I took a pay cut. No, what are you guys going to do for me? Are you going to give me some receivers? We can't bank on Gronkowski, like you said, Bill. All right, give me this. If it's not Sammy Watkins, who is it then? Can you wait?
I don't think the Patriots can wait. I think Brian makes an interesting point. And I said Mike Adams. Excuse me. I meant Mike Evans. I apologize about that. But I don't think the Patriots can wait. I think Brian made a fantastic point about Brady sort of just saying, you know what? Whatever, you're not paying me, go pay somebody I can throw to. And Brian's completely right. I mean, they haven't found that guy. Gronkowski just, for whatever reason, hasn't been healthy the last couple of seasons. Aaron Hernandez isn't coming back anytime soon. So I agree. You know, Brian changed my mind. I do think that there's some value in that. But at the same time, I mean, I know they swung and missed on quite a few picks. So I don't know if that's really the best route, I guess, to wait and play it towards the end of the draft. Or the end
pun
of the
intended
draft.
There. Pun intended there, I'm sure. But the thing is, here's my thing. If their defense is fine. They had a lot of injuries last year. Will Fork was out. Everybody was gone. They're just decimated on defense. And I don't think Khalid being there in the AFC Championship would have made a huge difference, but it certainly would have helped. Maybe go out, get yourself another corner that isn't from Rutgers, and get yourself a couple of receivers, and there you go. Now you have, again, you know, you can compete with Denver for the most prolific offense in the game. Steven Ridley, he's going to be fine. Shane Green kind of came into his own. Tom Brady's go-to target last year. And I don't mean for this to morph into some great Patriots debate, but to me, like you said, Brian, Sammy Watkins might be the most electrifying talent in the draft. So why not take the chance and go get him? You know, that's really, really my point. And you don't have those playmakers really at any other position, do you? Other than maybe, say, Clowney, Sammy Watkins, there really aren't any, like, devastating shutdown cornerbacks, big physical safeties like we've seen in years past. You know, can you give me another name, maybe, Shifts, that might jump up there and surprise people, hey, you know, here is another big play guy that some team needs to jump up and get.
Certainly, and, you know, just real quick for the Patriots, too, you know, if they decide not to, because as Bill mentioned, you know, it is a really deep wide receiver class. So if they waited to the end of round one, you know, a guy that just had a terrific combine from Oregon State, Brandon Cooks, who's kind of like almost a poor man, Sammy Watkins, just a little bit smaller, you know, he could be an interesting fit in that offense. As well, Odell Beckham Jr., who is just an electric talent from LSU and is also renowned for being a great route runner, which we know in the Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels system, you know, that's obviously one of the major attributes they look for. As far as other electric talents that I would consider trading up for, because I think that these guys are going to be impact players, studs from day one, you know, I'd have to go with my local guy, Khalil Mack from the University of Buffalo. You know, I honestly thought there would be a better chance of a 70-degree day in February in Buffalo than there would ever be a guy from UB going in the top five. But Khalil Mack somehow, some way, has beaten all the odds of being an overlooked recruit from the state of Florida coming out of high school and developing into almost a Von Miller-type clone that can do really everything at every level of the defense. He can get after the quarterback. He can drop back into coverage. He can excel in run support. You know, he's really almost a defensive coordinator's dream. It's, you know, the toy that you can do so much with. So he's a guy that I would certainly also consider trading up for. You know, other than that, like I said before, I mean, dating back to last year, I just love Teddy Bridgewater. You know, I still had my doubts about him in his sophomore year until the Sugar Bowl against the Florida Gators, when even if you'd never watched football before in your life, you could tell who the best player was on the field that day, despite Florida boasting, you know, future first-round picks on the defensive line, future draft picks in the secondary. And yet Teddy Bridgewater, just looks so poised, calm, collected in the pocket that I think the teams are undervaluing him right now as far as these teams that need a quarterback. And I think he's head and shoulders above Manziel and Broyles.
You're under the hoodies. I'm your host, Mike Pazeski, joined by Bill Kegel, as always, and special guest tonight, Brian Shipley. We're talking a little bit about the NFL Combine, and you mentioned Khalil Mack. A lot of people talking about maybe he'll stay home and Buffalo will take him. Buffalo has a lot of needs. You know, there's no question about that. Is that the way you go? Do you pair him with Kiko Alonso? You know, if he is such a dominating talent, you really solidify your linebacking core for years to come. I don't know. I think that's a C.J. Mosley is another name, I guess. Brian, if you had to choose, is it C.J. Mosley or is it Khalil Mack? I mean, best player available at that point, I'm guessing you're leaning Khalil Mack?
Right. And when it comes down to it, that's always my number one strategy, is I want the guy that I think has the best chance of going to multiple Pro Bowls and being an all-pro player. So even though I think C.J. Mosley, which is a great name to bring up for the Buffalo Bills, Mike, I think scheme-wise and need-wise, he's actually a better fit for the Bills. But I just don't think you can pass up on a guy like Khalil Mack who can get after the quarterback. You know, Mario Williams had a great season last year, but he's not getting any younger. And the Bills really don't have a lot of pass rush help behind them, let alone any young guys that can be the key pass rusher heading into the future. Another guy that I really like, too, coming off the edge, who I also think has kind of been undervalued after earlier in the season looking like a potential top five pick, is Anthony Barr from UCLA. Here's a guy that's an absolute athletic specimen that 2 years ago was a tight end. And then give credit to Jim Mora Jr. when he took over the UCLA program. He said, "You look like a defensive player to me." And Anthony Barr agreed. He learned the linebacker position. And in 2 short years, he went from an afterthought at tight end to a top 15 pick in one of the deepest drafts in recent NFL history. So he's another guy that I think could be a real interesting fit for the Bills. But to be totally honest with you, every Bills fan I talk to wants them to get an offensive weapon. They want to find out whether or not E.J. Manuel is the real deal. And it's hard to know if he's the real deal until you surround him with enough weapons to really give him a chance to succeed. So I think that a lot of fans would be ecstatic about Mike Evans to give him a big red zone target. And a name to sleep on would be Eric Ebron, the tight end from North Carolina, who could serve as their own little matchup nightmare.
He's one of those guys that I've been super high on all season. And you raised an interesting point, Brian. You talked about what fans want. And, Bill, you know, we hear so often on networks where, oh, well, this guy will sell tickets, and they've mentioned, you know, certainly that characteristic with Johnny Manziel. As an owner, is your first – it's a fine line. You know, is your first priority to sell tickets and put butts in the seats, or is your first priority to win? Ideally, you'd like to find a guy that can do both. But if you're the Cleveland Browns and you really need something, given the tumultuous offseason they've had, Bill, do you take a chance? And I'm not just saying on Manziel. I'm not saying it's anybody in general. Do you have to sell tickets first, or do you try to win first? You know, how do you find the fine line there?
Thankfully, for profit sharing in the NFL, that selling tickets isn't as important as it is in other sports. I do think that winning sells more tickets than anything, especially in a town like Cleveland.
Right.
So, or a town like Buffalo, even, where it's freezing here towards the end of the season, and it takes a special game or a special team to fill that stadium. So, I definitely think you draft to win. I don't think you draft to put fans in the seats. And like I said, nothing fills a stadium more than win.
Well, that's a great point. Nothing fills a stadium better than wins, or else Tim Tebow will be on a team right now. Do you know what I mean? That argument is blown out of the water because of that. And we've seen there's no place for that guy in the NFL. Give even his star power. He went to New York City, the media mecca in the entire land, and he didn't survive. All right, so you try to win games. You take the best player available, as Brian said, and sometimes it might not be that sexy guy. Sometimes it's that offensive tackle that you need to fortify an offensive line for 10 years. So that's my segue to the offensive line. And obviously you have the top guys of Greg Robinson, Jake Matthews, et cetera, Taylor Lewan out of Michigan, who I personally think is a tad overrated and doesn't really fit the high grade that he's been given by many. Brian, give me another guy out of, like, the top three there that might jump up and surprise people. A name I have my eye on is Cyrus Kwanja. He came in as a highly touted recruit to Alabama. Is this a guy that kind of flies under the radar a little bit in the late 20s that might be able to jump up?
Yeah, Mike, that's an interesting question. If you go back a year ago, everybody was saying how, you know, Alabama had all these offensive linemen primed to be taken in the 2013 draft, and yet everybody kept talking about this underclassman left tackle who looked like a future top 15 pick and was just coming off a terrific sophomore season. Obviously, Cyrus's junior season didn't go as planned, but I still thought he would be a nice undervalued pick until the combine. There's reports that multiple teams failed him due to his physical, due to a degenerative knee, and in the workouts, he just did not look very smooth whatsoever out there. So I would be a little reluctant to take him early, but I think, you know, a team such as, let's say, the Denver Broncos later on, you know, that might be a nice talent to fall into their lap late in the first round of a guy that has a lot of talent, but, you know, maybe just needs an offensive line coach to mold him and get the best out of him. A guy that I really like personally, who had a wonderful Senior Bowl, a wonderful year at Notre Dame, and that's their left tackle, Zach Martin. He reminds me of the Bills' second-round pick a few years ago, Cordy Glenn, not in skill set-wise whatsoever, because Cordy Glenn was, you know, a size speed freak. But in the idea that Cordy Glenn's value was you can draft him out of left tackle, which he played in college, and if that doesn't work out, you know, most scouts felt like he could become an all-pro guard. And that's the same type of reports that people are giving on Zach Martin this year, that he's probably good enough to hold down left tackle, but if he isn't, you can flip him over to right, or many think he could be an all-pro guard inside, almost like an Andy LaVitra. So I love taking guys where I know that I can stick them at the more valuable position, and at the very least, I know that if it doesn't work out due to, you know, lack of athleticism, lack of arm length, or any other question mark for Martin, I always know, at the very least, I'll have an excellent left guard or right guard.
Are
you on fire, Bill? Are you okay? You're yelling.
No, I'm not yelling. I swear to God, I don't know. I had to ask Brian a quick question. A friend of mine, Dan, just sent me a link saying Cleveland Browns like Derek Carr over Johnny Manziel, and I just wanted to get both of your thoughts on that, actually.
Sure. You know, Derek Carr, I watched a lot of him this year because, you know, I'm a college football freak, so I watch it from 12 noon to 12:30 a.m. on every Saturday in the fall. And this season, since Fresno State was pretty good, they always seem to be the late game on ESPN, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock start. And I liked a lot of what I saw of Derek Carr this year. Would I take him in the first round? No, I don't think so. But a lot like his older brother, you know, he has a terrific arm. He really seems to love the game and wants to study. They showed a clip where he was coming in on his own time to look at film when he couldn't be around the coaches due to the 20-hour NCAA rule. So I think that he is a potential NFL starter. You know, I think the big question for him is the Fresno State offense threw the ball over 7 yards about once every June moon. So, you know, we're really not sure if he can make those be accurate enough on the intermediate to deep throws. But as far as, you know, the natural skill set, he has a big arm. He ran a really nice 40, so you know he can at least scramble and get away and, you know, maybe pick up that big first down on a 3rd and 6. And I do find him very interesting.
Yeah, I certainly don't think he's a first-round pick. Bill, I can't stop laughing. The thought of you either on fire or trying to eat the microphone is embedded in my head right now.
No, man, my head was down. I apologize. It was too close to the little microphone thing.
But getting back to Derek Carr, no, he certainly has a big arm. He's the NFL prototype body, the arm, everything like that. And like you said, he can run a little bit, which is certainly intriguing. I don't think he's a first-round talent, but that doesn't mean he won't be taken in the first round. Because we've seen if any teams are willing to take risks on players, it's certainly at the quarterback position, which kind of leads me to my next point, a position where teams certainly don't reach for anymore is running back. The last running back that was taken highly was probably Trent Richardson a few years ago by Cleveland. We've seen him since traded somehow for a first-round pick. However Indy agreed to do that, I have no idea, but we've kind of gone away from halfbacks. Really, even in the first round, you look down the draft board, a lot of mock drafts don't even have a halfback in the first round. Bill, halfbacks are important. Why aren't they being drafted in the first round? Why aren't they sought after like they used to be?
Because I think their shelf life is so short, especially, I mean, and plus it's, you can get value in a running back in the third round as opposed to the first. I mean, Trent Richardson's a really good example, but I think a lot of times the passing game, if your passing game's strong, your running back will succeed. Look at O'Shawn Marino. Peyton Manning gets there. The guy's career, for him anyway, takes off. So unless it's a special back like Peterson, that's a once-in-a-generation type guy, and even then, LeSean McCoy is great. There's a lot of really good running backs that you just find second, third round. And it's just, I don't know. I think most running back success is based on the offense around them, as opposed to a quarterback where they make the rest of their offense better than they can see.
There's no question about that. You're under the hoodies. I'm Mike Pazinski. He's Bill Kegel, joined by special guest Brian Shipley. He's our NFL combine guru. And Brian, before we let you go, I wanted to get – you sent me an interesting message earlier today. You thought that the NFL combine is severely underrated. I tend to disagree with you. I don't really think it matters how high Tom Brady can jump or how fast he can run. Try to sway me, man. Can you convince me that I need to take it more serious?
I think I can, actually, Mike, and here's why. The NFL Combine is designed to put these guys out on the on-the-field drills, the 40-yard dash, and a lot of things that they're probably never going to do in a game situation, which is why most people seem to be critical of it. What I'd have to say, though, is that what the Combine shows us is that it shows us who's an athlete and who's a little bit less athletic. Is this the exact formula to who's going to be a good player in the NFL? Of course not. But, you can hide guys during games for extended period of times, but eventually, no matter what position you play, it's going to come down to an individual battle in space. And so if I see a left tackle that looks like he's having a very difficult time making athletic movements at the Combine, and he's going up against an outside linebacker or defensive end that looked very fluid, a smooth athlete at the Combine, I'd say 95% of the time, I'm going to put my money on that smooth, fluid athlete winning that individual battle. If you win enough individual battles in a game, eventually you're going to win the game. So I just think that whether it's a corner wide receiver, left tackle, defensive end, et cetera, I think that the more you can see which athletes can excel in space, I think that those are the guys that you're going to want to lean towards drafting more than a guy that might not have the athleticism but might be a very good college football player. Everybody's a good athlete in the NFL, and the best ones, the teams with the most athletes tend to be the ones that are successful. I think Seattle is a prime example of that this year.
They've drafted better than just about any team in the league, and they've certainly done their homework. One more question quick before you go, Brian. Give me one guy, not a first-round guy, maybe second, third, even fourth, fifth, one guy that you think is going to make a huge impact that nobody's talking about right now.
Sure. There's a lot of different ways I could go, but I'm going to stick in South Bend, Indiana, and go with Troy Nicholas, the tight end. Recruited out of high school, and he went to Notre Dame. In his freshman year, he was an outside linebacker, who they actually had a lot of high hopes for on the offensive side of the ball. His sophomore year, they switched him over to tight end at the beginning of the season, and he was Eifert, a first-round pick a year ago. He was his caddy and his backup. And I can tell you from watching a lot of Notre Dame games, he was not very good. We come into his junior season this year, and I'm not sure if there was a player that improved more from his sophomore to his junior year than Troy Nicholas. And I think that he's a total package. I have an affinity for tight ends that can block. We see too many of these guys that all they want to do is run routes in the slot and, don't really want to mix it up inside. That's not Nicholas at all. He's a traditional tight end that will block a defensive end, block a linebacker, and be an asset in the running game. And more importantly for the modern game, he's 6'7", 265 pounds, and he can run. So he's an absolute matchup nightmare. He's a terrific red zone threat. He's rapidly improving as a route runner. And I think a few years from now, we're gonna be hearing a lot of Troy Nicholas's name on fantasy draft days when people are taking him high for special offensive skills.
Folks at home, mark it down. Brian Shipley has spoken. Tight end Notre Dame, Troy Nicholas. Brian, thank you for your time, man. You've been most excellent.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Mike and Bill. Take care.
All All right. Thanks, Brian.
Bye.
Little NFL Combine talk right there. It looks like this is always a surprise to me. It looks like we have a guest who's been on hold for 15 minutes. I don't know who it is, but we're gonna bring him on and see who we got. Who's on the line?
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Anthony calling out of Atlanta.
What's up, Anthony?
All right. Yeah, I was been listening to you guys. Pretty good conversation about the combines.
Okay.
I like Johnny Manziel. I think Johnny Manziel is going to be a good professional quarterback. But a lot of people seem to have doubts about Johnny Manziel. I base my opinion based on what I've seen him do in games against the best teams in the country. That's really the only criteria that you can judge somebody on, how good an athlete is. How does he perform in a game? And Johnny Manziel, and I'm very critical of quarterbacks, and Johnny Manziel has performed every time in a game.
I'm not sure if our guest not sure what happened there, but thank you for the call, man. We definitely appreciate it. But
can you hear me? Hello?
Bill, you still there, buddy? I think I got
him.
You still there?
Yeah.
All right. What he was trying to say before he broke up was that Johnny Manziel, he's played against the best competition in the SEC in the country. Okay? I guess that's really all you have to go on, right? I mean, based on what you see.
Yeah, it is. I think he makes a good point. Whereas he did sort of tear up Alabama a little bit, but at the same time, I don't know if his ability is going to translate to the next level. Running around, he's not going to run around and draw defenses in with his speed because there's defensive linemen that are as fast as him. Where that wasn't necessarily the case in college. So, I think if he goes to the right system, I just don't see it. I just didn't see his game in college football translating to an NFL field where the game is so much faster than him.
I think what the caller was really trying to say was that if you go against the best week in, week out, and it's really hard to argue that the SEC is best. I mean, they've proven their worth time and time again. If you go against the best, that means, you know, in order to be the best, you got to beat the best. And I guess what the caller was saying was that he's done that. It's hard to really disagree with that, but this isn't NCAA Football 14 on the PS3 or PS4. You can't just run up to the line with the quarterback, suck the defenders in, and throw an 80-yard bomb. It's not how it works. It's real life. And you have to be able to read defenses. You have to be able to dissect the coverages that the defensive coordinators are throwing at you. And that's really, to me, that's the big question. Certainly he has all the athletic intangibles that you're ever going to need at the quarterback position or any position for that matter, but it's what's above the neck that really counts for me, and we've seen the quarterback position kind of evolve into that. Even Russell Wilson, who was a fine athlete in his own right, he's smart. He gets it. He knows what he needs to do. He doesn't try to do too much, and like Brian said earlier in the show, he really kind of evolved, and I hate the term game manager, but that's what he is. But he's a game manager who can make big plays with his feet and with his arm. Yeah, Johnny Manziel can do that on rare occasions. However, it's the mistakes. He threw several interceptions last year. There has to be a balance, and I'm not sure Johnny Manziel has. He doesn't have.
You know what?
He doesn't have the brain. Go ahead.
I just had this thought. I wonder if him wanting to prove doubters incorrect is going to hurt his ability to kind of let the game come to him like Wilson, where Wilson reminds me of a guy that's just, all right, this is what you need. Okay, coach, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and I'm going to stay within your game plan and improvise only when I have to, where I don't know if Manziel has the kind of personality like Wilson where he's willing to just take it in, listen to what the coach says, and then, you know, implement it on the field, I think he's gonna start, you know, quote unquote feeling it. And I think he just seems like the guy that's gonna start chucking the ball around.
Well, our caller has called back in. He's certainly resilient in his efforts, and I'm not sure what happened there, man, with the technical difficulties. But go ahead and finish your point about Manziel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just saying that Johnny Manziel has been resilient and he's been consistent every game that he's played. So that's how he won me over as a legitimate quarterback.
Let me ask you a question. So if you had the first pick in the NFL draft and you're the Houston Texans, you have no problems at all, even though Jadeveon Clowney, you saw him, you lived down south, you've seen every game he's played in probably. You know, you have no hesitation taking Johnny Manziel over potentially having the most formidable defensive line in all of football for 8 to 10 years.
Taking Johnny Manziel as opposed to who?
Jadeveon Clowney.
Is he a defensive lineman?
And I think, Bill, I'm not really sure. we need some screeners. We got to pay some interns here, I think.
That's going to come out of your pocket, bro, not mine.
You make way more money than I do, my friend.
I don't know, a lot is the right word, but sure.
We do appreciate the call, though. Yes, Jadeveon Clowney is a defensive end. I don't know how Paul – you don't listen to Paul Feinbaum. I'm not sure how he does it. I'm really not sure. Because that reminded me –
I
just felt like Paul – I felt like Paul Feinbaum in a fishbowl for like 3 minutes right there.
You know what, though? I like that guy. I like his passion. He felt really strongly about Manziel. And it's – you know what? He had a good point.
But
he
nobody
made a
else.
Really good point that's made against the talk.
He felt passionately about Johnny Manziel and nobody else. But we definitely appreciate the call, man. Feel free to call back in next week. We'll be definitely talking about more NFL Combine talk. We have about 8 minutes left, and I want to switch gears and talk about Wichita State. I really wish we had a lot more time because we're certainly going to disagree on this. Bill, they're overrated. I go at it every single day with people, especially Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Respect the hell out of his work, but he's wrong. He's dead wrong. In his latest column, he accuses everybody else. He blames. It's on you, he says, if you doubt Wichita State or if you're not a believer in what they're doing. I'm going to throw a stat out at you, Bill. You ready for this? Prepare to be mind-boggled. In the last 10 years, according to Ken Pomeroy's rankings, the lowest strength of schedule by any national championship team was 42, and that was the 06 Florida Gators. Okay? Can you go ahead and take a guess as to where Wichita State's strength of schedule is this year?
I'm gonna guess 65th.
Why don't you go ahead and double that?
At least, sorry, 130. That's
134. That is their strength of schedule according to probably the most revered ranking. College basketball ranking system in the entire sport, Ken Pomeroy at kenpom.com. It's a fantastic site. They are ranked 134. By contrast, Kansas is 1, Villanova 5, and Syracuse 49. And Syracuse hasn't played a great schedule either. That tells you how bad Wichita State's schedule is. So even the greatest defeats are going to be argued against. They're going to be torn down. Why am I wrong? Tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me why I beat my head against the wall every single day.
The argument I could make is they're running to the Final Four last year. They beat Pitt. They beat Gonzaga. You know what? LaSalle will cross off. They beat Ohio State, who was second in the bracket they played in, and then they barely lost to Louisville. So. And plus, I mean, you beat who you play. I don't know. They just, I mean, the last game they lost was to the national champions, and before that, I mean, they kind of ripped through the tournament a little bit. So obviously they're not, you know, they're not 2001 Duke, but they're also 30-0, and you play who you play, and you know it's not their fault. They're right where they're at. They're just they're just taking care of business.
So,
and
okay,
what else can you?
Okay, you beat who's in front of you. I get that, but why should you be rewarded for playing in a weak conference and you really have no? You have one. I'm sorry, one strong non-conference win, and that's against St. Louis, who was unranked at the time. Okay, they weren't even ranked. They're having a.
Yeah, but who's the best player to come out of St. Louis? You know, you're right. Are you really asking that question?
Are you really asking that question right now?
No. I'm just saying I don't have a good argument for you. I apologize. You're right. I'm just saying.
I don't know. I'm not trying to be right. I'm not trying to be, but I want to hit you real quick with the most famous, at least in our lifetime, St. Louis Billiken alum, and that was you're going to laugh when you hear his name. Remember Larry Hughes? Tell me you remember Larry Hughes.
I was trying to remember. I pictured him from the Nelly video with Kelly Rowland. I just could not place his name for the life of me. I was sitting here. I was like, I can see the guy's face. I just can't remember what his name was. Thank you. Sixers. I mean, he played for the Warriors for a while. I know Larry.
I guess what my point is that if your only quality win is St. Louis, and I'm not going to take anything away from that win because there's probably not a team in the nation that plays as good a defense as St. Louis. They're sound on both sides of the ball. They don't make mistakes. They shoot the ball well. They do everything. But when your second best win is Tennessee, and they're 7-7 in probably the worst major conference in the history of college basketball, you can't tell me that you deserve a one seed. You can't. There are 10 other teams that deserve one seed before Wichita State does.
So if you go to college football though,
so I guess I really there is no argument. You were going to disagree with me, but I really think I just beat you into submission.
You did, yeah. I'll give you that. Listen. I'm looking up Wichita State right now. You want to know who the best two players to play in the NBA from Wichita State are?
Hit me.
It's Antoine Carr, who's most known for his goggles, and Xavier McDaniel, who played on the Seahawks during the Kemp Gary Payton era, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, hope
so they're not exactly, so they're not exactly North Carolina.
They're not exactly. I get what you're saying, man. They played well last year. That's fantastic. That was last year, man. You don't play. You shouldn't be rewarded for playing nobody. You know what I'm saying? And we got about 2 minutes left. And I got to be honest. I've done a lot of radio shows in my time, and I've never been as entertained by a caller as I was by that guy.
Listen, I love all guys. I love all sports fans with passion. Regardless of what it's for, that guy clearly had an opinion on Manziel, and I love the fact that he shared it with us. That's our first caller that we didn't know, Mike. That's exciting.
That is exciting. But I can't get over the fact he's like, who's that other guy?
I know.
I hope he's listening.
I know.
He's an excellent dude. I hope he calls back next week, and we're just having a little fun, but we definitely appreciate the call. An English woman in my ear tells me that we have 90 seconds, Bill. Do you have any parting thoughts? Can we first talk about how good Brian Shipley was?
Dude, I've known Brian for about 5 years now, just under 5 years, and I've been telling him ever since I met him is that guy is better than Todd McShay. He's just a plethora of knowledge. Wait till we get into the MLB draft. All right. Brian is going to shock you more than I think that caller did. So this is exciting. I'm pumped. Brian is just a wealth of knowledge, dude.
Unless Brian can make me feel like Paul Feinbaum in a fishbowl, I'm not sure that's possible.
Yeah, but listen, Brian's a good dude. He knows a lot. And every time I talk to him, I get text messages more intelligent from him than anything I see on First Take.
Spend more time with your wife, Bill. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm going to go hug her in a little bit.
Sounds like a plan.
But,
this has been Under the Hoodies. He's Bill Kegel. I'm Mike Krzyzewski. We want to thank our caller. We want to thank Brian Shipley for his wealth of knowledge. This has been Under the Hoodies. We will talk to you guys next week. Adios.
Later.